Hello, welcome to the Hoop Collective Podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we're doing on Thursday afternoon. Joining us from New York City is Tim Von Hemps.
Hello, everybody.
And joining us from San Antonio, where he's on assignment, not an assignment for ESPN, but he's on assignment, is Van McMahon.
Howdy, partners. The IT department tells me to jump. I say, how high? And here I am.
You're Mr. Texas. You haven't been banned from San Antonio, so why shouldn't you head on down to Wemby Land?
Well, a little bit more analysis of the job that Pop's done this season, and that banning may come.
All right. So, look, I'm just going to cop to it. We're going to talk about the Warriors and Lakers right now, okay? I'm sorry. I try not to do it, but I agree that it's all over ESPN TV, and this podcast is supposed to be separate from that, but it is what it is. And yes, we're going to talk about the 9th and 10th positions in the Western Conference because it's compelling at this point. The Lakers got beat on Wednesday night by the Kings for the 7th out of the last 8 times. And one of the most remarkable stats in the NBA, and if you guys disagree with me, please say, Domantas Sabonis, 10-0 in his career against Anthony Davis. And if you watch this game, he crushed AD.
So it has not been a competitive sweep.
No. The Lakers, in the 4 games they played this year, the Lakers gave up an average of 127 points. Now, I know that the Kings play high-tempo, high-speed offense, and that you can't necessarily look at apples to apples, but give me a break. Give me a break. The average margin of victory, I believe, is 10 or 11 points. This one was 12, I think. LeBron was under the weather. He didn't play well, whatever. Sabonis dominated AD at both ends of the court, and he has repeatedly. And I'm going to tell you something. The Western, and I know it's not necessarily A versus B, but Sabonis not getting put into the All-Star game by the West coaches ain't looking so good right now.
It's not. And look, that Sabonis dominating AD thing, they don't see each other again this regular season, do they?
Not in the regular season.
They very well could, though, with what would be the 8th seed on the line. And then if you're AD, if you finally break through the Sabonis wall, it's, it might be you get to see the European center who dominated you in the West Finals last year.
Right. Well, But let me say this. Yes, it was a bad day for the Lakers because, the Nuggets, for the first time since November, woke up today on Thursday, number one in the Western Conference. Mm-hmm. Just put that aside for a second. If you are a Laker fan, and I'm going to start calling the Lakers fans the Dreamers because their dreams of a magical ride back to the Western Conference Finals, there's a couple of things you need to put into your nightly prayer routine. And that is now going to be for you to root for the Kings to win just about every game on the way in because you don't want the Kings in the 7-8 situation. You want the Kings in 6th place so you don't got to see them.
Maybe that was part of the Lakers' plan last night. Hey, the Kings woke up this morning in the 6th seed. Like, hey, let's get the Kings out of the picture here. Bump them up to 6.
Well, I don't know if it's going to be the Kings who are going to be in 6th, but I feel like the Suns will not be in 6th because the Suns have a brutal schedule. The only team with a harder schedule coming in is the Hornets. They're not favored in every game they play, so it really doesn't matter how good their opponent is. I guess when they play the Wizards and Pistons. In fact, right now, the Pistons are playing better than the Hornets. So other than that, the Suns have the hardest schedule coming in. Their last 12 games especially are absolutely brutal. They begin an Eastern trip, I believe, this weekend.
They begin Thursday night in Boston.
We're
recording before the game tonight.
It gets rough from there. So I actually think that it's a better case for the Suns to end up in the 7 or 8, which would favor the Lakers.
Mavericks have that tiebreaker.
Mavericks have the tiebreaker over the Lakers, too.
They do.
So as the Lakers, the 6th seed is gone. Goodbye. Even the Dreamers cannot dream about the 6th seed for the Lakers. It's over. Thank you for playing. Appreciate it. Headed for the play-in, the 3rd out of the last 4 years. The 8th seed is not gone yet, but they are 2 games back of the Mavericks, and the Mavericks have the tiebreaker, so that makes it pretty much 3 games behind the Mavericks, and I don't see them catching them.
Forget the games overall. The thing that matters is the win-loss column.
Right.
And in the win-loss column, it's four back of Sacramento and Phoenix and three back of Dallas with tiebreakers in hand for the other team.
I only pay attention to the loss column because that's what I'm saying.
It's 3-4 and it's with 15 games to play. So they've got to play five games better than Sacramento and four games better than Dallas over 15 games, which is extraordinarily unlikely. Projection-wise, the Lakers are projected to finish two wins behind and the Warriors three. So
the Lakers, by the way, have a six-game road trip left to run. I might also add that. So, because they've been home for a month and they haven't really, I looked, by the way, their last 15 games coming as we sit here and do this now, over the last 15 games, just because that's the easiest to look up, frankly, but I could go farther back. They're 29th in defense.
That doesn't seem very good.
What are we talking about here? So, and they ought to be appreciative that Steph went down because the losses that the Warriors were derailed from their hot streak when Steph's injury. And so they are tied in the loss column with the Warriors, which brings us to Saturday night. Saturday night, Warriors at Lakers. It's a very important game, even though it's between 9 and 10.
Well, yeah, you want home court advantage in 9-10.
So
sounds
tied
crazy, but it's the truth.
They're tied in the loss column. They've played twice. It's 1-1. LeBron didn't play in the game the Warriors won. Mm-hmm. Steph is scheduled to return to practice on Friday. Assuming no setbacks, I expect him to play Saturday night.
That's definitely the hope.
The tiebreaker after head-to-head competition is division record. Actually, it's division ranking and division record. Well, if they're tied, they'll be in the same spot in the division. And the Lakers are ahead by like four games in division record, three or four.
Well, this is a very simple equation. The Warriors have to win the final two games because if they don't, if they win both, they'll have a better division record than the Lakers. And if they don't, they'll have a worse one. So they play twice more. So the Warriors have to win the season series regardless to win.
So if the Lakers win on Saturday, they get the tiebreak. Bottom line.
Or if they win the game they play in early April, they get the tiebreaker. They just have to win one of the two games against the Warriors. Because they played an extra game in division because of the in-season tournament when they played Phoenix.
Does that count as a division game?
Yeah. Okay. They're going to end up with 17 division games.
Okay. So the Warriors, and now Draymond is being bothered by a back issue. He didn't want any part of McMahon. McMahon was going to interview him the other day.
I had a nice chat with Draymond, actually, after the game.
Oh, two podcasters just chopping it up?
I told him.
And by the way,
I enjoyed his podcast work and not to listen to Bontemps constant hating on it.
And by the way, to your point about where the Lakers were a month ago, because you were on top of this, they have a month at home schedule back then. Going into February 8th, when this basically entire month in the Western time zone Pacific time zone started.
Entire month Lakers in California.
I think they had a game in Phoenix. But either way, they were four losses behind the Suns, four losses behind the Kings, two losses behind Dallas. So they're literally in the same spot they were in a month ago. And there's obviously a big chunk of games out of the picture for them to try to catch up.
And also, by the way, Rudy Gobert, or this podcast favorite NBA conspiracy theorist, would likely suggest that Draymond's lower back soreness was directly related to Steph Curry's absence last night.
That's right.
If you'll recall, Rudy believes there's a link between Draymond either sitting or getting booted from games when Steph is not available. I'm not saying it's true. I'm just saying
I'm just saying.
Speaking of conspiracy theories with officiating, I know that it's a popular thing right now to say, oh my gosh, the referees have enacted a special plan to drop scoring in the league. And Adam Silver brought them all together on a super Zoom call and, you know, spoke a couple of words in Latin and they instantaneously executed the plan of lowering scoring. Dudes, in January, the NBA publicly, and if you have 15 minutes where you'd like to fall asleep, you can search for it and watch it on the NBA website. They put out an update to the points of emphasis that they tell the officials. And it is very dry and very boring, but you can watch it. And Monty McCutcheon, the head of the officials, goes over clip after clip after clip of what they're going to start focusing on the second half of the season. And like, out of the five, or maybe he goes over seven or eight things, and like four or five of them are on knocking down foul hunting. Like there's clip after clip after clip of guys hunting fouls, kicking out their leg, you know, doing rip through moves. Like, it's barely tolerable for somebody unless you're into the X's and O's of officiating. That happened publicly in January, like it was released like January 19th or 20th. And after that, free throws have gone down because the officials have been more watching out from the league level instructed to cut down on the foul hunting. It is not a conspiracy. It is out there in the public. That's all I'm going to say about it.
You know what else is very dry and very boring?
Talking about that.
Noel, yes. But the Warriors offense that I watched, that Steph Curry watched from his couch in the Bay Area. Holy crap. Jonathan Kuminga was the only guy that they had in uniform who could put the ball in the bucket.
Yeah.
Well, they're in 10th place for a reason.
Yep.
But hopefully Steph's back Saturday night. We can have all eyes on the NBA to see who might have home court advantage in that West 9-10 game, baby.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facility safe and your people safer. Call or click Grainger.com or just stop by. All right, so McMahon, Luka left the game early on Wednesday night. The Mavericks have won four in a row.
Luka's triple-double streak ended. It was going to end regardless. He only had 3 rebounds, 9 assists. And he had an off game. But he left with 6 minutes and change left in the fourth quarter. They are calling it left hamstring soreness. And I have a pretty good indication that his hammy was bothering him before he signaled to Jay Kidd, hey, I need to go. Because when he checked back into the game 22 seconds earlier, he had a heating pad on that hamstring. So he did not make the trip to Oklahoma City, which they treated like some sort of state secret. It was pretty obvious he wasn't going to make the trip. And then everybody else had left and they obviously go straight to the airport on a back-to-back. And I hear these horns playing and I recognize it as some Slovenian song. And I poke my head out there.
You being a connoisseur and knowing of Slovenian pop music.
Yeah, maybe it was a Balkan song. I can't confirm it was Slovenian. Anyways, right. And I popped my head out there, and Luka had not showered yet. He's still he'd been getting treatment, and he's out there meeting with the Slovenian group. So I'm like, gee whiz.
Yeah, the plane is taxiing at Love Field, and Luka's still in the locker room.
Yeah, gee whiz. Wonder if Luka's going to Oklahoma City after he had to exit a game. So anyways, they are officially calling it left hamstring soreness, not a strain. Not going to play against Oklahoma City. We'll see if he's available Sunday against Denver. Obviously, tough time not to have your MVP candidate when you're facing the two top teams in the West. If, and this is a hypothetical if they decide, hey, Luka could really use 7 to 10 days off, the next week actually would be a good week for that because they only have 2 games next week on the road against the Spurs on Tuesday. And then at home against the Jazz on Thursday. I don't know if you guys have noticed, but the Jazz aren't real interested in winning games right now. So wouldn't be the worst time for him if he needs several days for him to take it, aside from the fact that they've got Thunder and Nuggets in these next two.
Well, that's good news for the Dreamers because, you know, you give the Lakers a chance to get back, if Luka does have to miss some time. Bad news for the Dreamers is that, you know, the Nuggets are in one. Now, mm-hmm. And as we sit here right now, the Nuggets are 10-1 since the fast becoming famous Jokic text that Kentavious Caldwell-Pope talked about. Do you think
KCP keep championship players, Rob Pelinka?
Do you think Jokic is very active in the Nuggets group text, McMahon?
I would guess not. I don't think I bet she's not a big emoji guy. Like,
wouldn't it be amazing if he was actually like a huge emoji guy? Like, if he only text in emojis, wouldn't that
maybe
be amazing?
Yeah, maybe it does. It does help.
I was going to say, I can't, I don't know if I would really go either way on any of that with him. Feels like,
well, do you remember, do you remember last year after they won the finals and he came to the press room and they asked somebody in the press conference asked, Novak Djokovic, I think had just won, I don't know, Wimbledon or whatever it was, and I think became the all-time leading winner. And they said, have you heard from Novak yet? And he said, he's like, let me see. And he pulled out his phone. He looked at, it's a classic piece of video. And he looks at his phone and he sees like, God knows how many text messages. And he just goes, oh, bleep, and slams his phone down. So I'm not sure that he's super duper into text, but, you know, remember right before the All-Star break, the Nuggets dropped 3 games in a row and very looked bad doing it. Were they in fourth at that point? I think they hit the All-Star break in fourth.
I mean, it was a sort of a jumbled up mess at the time, but they were either in fourth or, I mean, they were all together.
Yeah.
You know, but look, it's been sort of the inverse.
Playing very well at the time.
Yeah, yeah. It's sort of been the inverse of last season, right? This time of year, last year, everybody was wondering about where the Nuggets were going to be. And, you know, they were struggling down the stretch. They'd already wrapped up the one seed and people were wondering if they were going to struggle in the playoffs again or not. And this year it's almost the inverse where they got to March 1st and said, all right, let's make sure we get home court advantage in the West and have, you know, put together this great streak and had obviously a bit of an escape the other day against Toronto, but had the great win against Boston last week and are certainly rounded into form and look every bit the defending champs that they are.
Well, yeah. So you mentioned they'd lost 3 straight going into the break, and then you come out of the break, and oh my gosh, Jamal Murray's dealing with shin splints. Like,
right?
You know, how's this going to go? And they had a back to back come out of the break, pretty friendly back to back. Are they the Wizards now, or are they still the Lizards?
I don't know. They did get
some wins. They got a couple wins,
but I think that they just lost to the what's left over of the Grizzlies. So
by the way, timeout. Moment of the season for the Grizzlies. Poor Grizzlies fans.
Geez.
The NBA tweets out this video from when the Grizzlies played the Wizards the other night, and it's Tyus Jones wearing a Wizards jersey, going and seeing his old friends with the Grizzlies. All 4 of them, Jaren Jackson, Brandon Clark, Ja Morant, and Dez Bane, all 4 of them in street clothes.
Yeah.
This was the epitome of the Grizzlies season, looking at Tyus Jones, who was traded in a move that was totally had blown up in their face. And then the 3 of the best players of the team and a very important sub.
4 of the top 6, I would say, yes.
Not playing. I was like, oh my God, that's the
Hey, as long as we're going Grizzlies on that year. Aside, quick good news for the Grizzlies. Desmond Bane and Brandon Clark practiced with the Memphis Hustle, played 5-on-5 on Tuesday. And Bane actually is going to come back and play for the Grizzlies again soon, which so I would say a mild surprise given the state of things. And
me
then
too.
Just the fact that Clark was able to play has progressed to playing 5-on-5.
Yes, practice, absolutely. You know,
coming off the Achilles, that's a huge step for him.
Be good to see him get a little time on the court before the end of the year just to see where he's at.
Right. Obviously. Anyways, we were talking about the Nuggets coming out of the break. You know, Jamal Murray's got shin splints. So he sat that second game of that back-to-back. They spanked the Blazers leftovers. Since then, in 9 games, he's averaging 24 points, 7 assists, shooting splits of 53, 46, 79. Super efficient. Good. And they are 8-1 in those games. So I don't know how concerning Jamal Murray's shin splits are.
Overall,
he's playing his best ball of the season.
PT, post-text, which I assume Jokic was like, come on, boys, let's start acting like champs, which is kind of what Caldwell Pope said when he talked about it. They're 10-1, number 2 in offense, number 7 in defense, and Jokic is slaying. And they're not going to catch the Celtics for the number 1 overall, but getting the number 1 in the West is definitely doable because they have the easiest schedule amongst all the teams in the West, especially amongst those contenders. They play the Wolves 3 times without Towns, so they have total control about where they're going to be, which, you know, they're down 0-1 in the season series, but the Nuggets control that. And the Thunder have a top 10 difficult schedule. So the Thunder are just behind them, and they get, we'll see what happens tonight. They get Dallas on a second night of a back-to-back without Luka. That's a nice sweetener. But I like the Nuggets to get that number one seed, and they're very hard to beat at home. So the path of the Lakers that they could think about was, okay, get through the two play-in games. And I will say this, you do have to give credit to LeBron and AD that in these one-off games, in the in-season tournament play-in era, the Adam Silver, don't tell anybody, but we added games to the schedule. We still care about player rest, but we added games to the schedule. Don't pay attention. They have won all those games. They're 2-0 in the play-ins. They won all three games this year in the single eliminations in the in-season tournament. They have demonstrated the ability to win those games.
The Lakers would be the favorites if they could get in March Madness, no doubt about it.
Well, they're in March Madness right now. They needed to win all these games. They're not.
No, they're in March Sadness after the way that Sabonis pulled their pants down and spanked their butts.
Sabonis. So, I mean, there's some stats from that game that ESPN Stats and Info racked up. Like,
look, it's the same thing we've talked about with the Lakers now for a long time. When they can punk a smaller team, they can be a dangerous team. When they play a team with size inside, it's a different story. It's what happened in the conference finals last year, and it's what's happened whenever every time they've played against Sabonis this year, and the whole time AD's played Sabonis. I mean, you can just look at the way this week went. They play Monday against Minnesota, and there's no Gobert and Towns in that game, right, if I remember right. And AD right. has an insane game, and then
25 and 25. Did he not?
And then they,
with like a whole bunch of other numbers too.
And then they play
seven blocks against, and all kinds.
Yeah,
of stuff.
And then they play
seven
against
steals, I think it was.
Right. Yeah, and then they play against Sabonis, and they get beasted in a game they have to win. Like that's the team in a nutshell.
Well, the Warriors are small. Here's the Dreamers move. The Warriors mm-hmm. are small.
Mm-hmm.
The Suns are small. They have the 3-2. They played the Suns five times this year. They're 3-2 against them. Now, I think a couple of those wins happened before without Beal, but they're 3-2 against them. So that could be your play-in zone. And you're hoping that the Thunder, who they're 3-1 against and also play small, have the one seed. That's your path to glory to get to the second round.
The opposite of that is you're more than likely going to have to beat either the Kings or the Mavericks in the second play-in game. And the Kings have Sabonis, who, as we've mentioned, is 10-0 all time against Anthony Davis. And the Mavericks have the closest thing to Wilt Chamberlain. I'm talking about Daniel Gafford, baby.
That's right.
I don't want to jinx the man.
Only one first-round pick. Forget about this. They overpaid. They only gave up one first-round pick.
A swap. A swap.
A swap.
Now, a swap that could be awfully costly, but we've covered that. Anyways, Gafford going into tonight's game, 33 straight made field goals. Only Wilt Chamberlain with 35 has had more in NBA history. But Gafford, since they've plugged him back into the starting lineup, that's when the Mavericks got on this winning streak. But they've not played Maxi Kleba much at center at all. I think that's matchup specific. It's been the tag team between Daniel Gafford and Derek Lively II. And I will say this, give Derek Lively a ton of credit. He's a rookie who's been the starter most of the season. Going forward, he's a huge piece of the foundation. They were struggling. They'd lost 5 of 6. One of the adjustments was to pull him from the starting lineup, bring him off the bench. And he's been awesome since then. He's played really, really well. He handled it like a pro. All that to say, the Mavericks have a pretty nice center tag team.
Well, and by the way, you were talking about Dallas's upcoming schedule. Two of the more important games left on the schedule are Tuesday, March 26th and Friday, March 29th in Sacramento. Mavs play a baseball series Tuesday and Friday in Sacramento. Obviously, as of now, we assume Luka's playing in those games. We'll see. But as we sit here today, 7, 8, 9, 10 is Dallas, Phoenix, Lakers, Warriors in that order. So you could have a play-in featuring Luka, KD, and Book, or Luka, Kyrie, KD, and Booker. Obviously, LeBron and AD and Steph, which would be something. And the Kings are right now several percentage point favorite to end up with the sixth seed. And a lot of that could really come down to those two games in Sacramento. If they win those two home games, that's a pretty massive leg up on the rest of that group.
There's two off days between games in Sacramento. Two off days.
Correct.
McMahon, I'm going to act as your editor for the next 90 seconds. Find out what the Mavs are doing. Where are they staying those two off days? Are they staying in Sacramento?
I bet you they're staying at that hotel that's got the tunnel to the arena. Be my best guess. I'll be staying. I'm going to see the Thunder during that stretch.
I think they're staying in Napa with a tunnel to the vineyard.
I don't think that'd be the best idea in the world.
Well, either way, those two games are going to be awfully, awfully important, because if Sacramento can win those two games, they're going to have a pretty massive leg up. Because you mentioned, Brian, I mean,
Sacramento needs to win one to get the tiebreaker, because they've won the first two against the Mavericks.
Right. Well, if they can win both, obviously that's two swing games in their favor. And as you said, with Phoenix having that very difficult schedule down the stretch, they're pretty solidly projected to finish eighth. So it really could come down to Sacramento and Dallas for that sixth spot. And they're basically even in win projections too. So that's going to be pretty massive.
Coming out of that baseball series, the Mavericks are going to have a very firm idea of just how realistic their hopes of avoiding the play-in are.
Yep.
This is something that's been different in my 20 years covering the NBA. Teams with off days in and around SAC now go to Napa. Like, it happens multiple times a year. That
Wendy's
never happened.
All about the wine.
Oh no, they would
wine and gold, wine and Napa. When he's all about the wine,
I don't drink wine. I couldn't tell you what's any good. I don't like the taste of red wine. If this is the old days and they had off days, they'd be flying down to LA. They'd be getting planes down to Vegas. Dudes go to Napa now. That is a thing. I blame Baxter Holmes.
I was told that the proximity to Napa was a big attraction for DeMontis Sabonis. It certainly wasn't reflected in any sort of discount he gave the Kings on the extension, but apparently
no. Domo has an estate, I believe, in Sonoma County. All right, so the Western Conference play-in situation is shaping up. By the way, how'd you like the Pelicans voodoo that we put on them after talking about it the other day?
No. I told you what happened there. I figured it out as I'm scanning the scores last night and seeing the Pelicans getting their butts kicked by Cleveland. I'm like, old Wendy enacted the Hoop Collective curse because he knew the Pelicans were playing his beloved Cavs.
Yeah, well, the Pelicans had one of the worst shooting nights of the NBA season against the Cavs at home last night.
What did they shoot?
I don't know. The Cavs
only 4 for 22 from three, outscored by 48 points on the three-point line.
Jackson, start the Cavs clock. I've been
hey, the Mavs were 6 of 27 last night and won. At one point, they were shooting 7-point-something%.
I don't think you're winning in 2024 when you get outscored at the 3-point line by 48. I don't care where the game is.
Even when you outscore the other team by 19 at the foul line, it's hard to overcome 48 points at the 3-point line.
That's true.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and on the Ways to Win podcast, coaches Craig Robinson and John Calipari are here to help. Each week, Craig and Coach Cal use their on-court wisdom to solve your off-court problems. Whether it's trouble at home or a workplace dilemma, the coaches will help you find a winning formula for success. And you'll hear from prominent athletes, business leaders, and celebrities who reveal insights that made them into the leaders they are today. Like President Obama, who breaks down his bracket and talks about how he deals with pressure by projecting confidence, believing in your team, and taking criticism. Listen to Ways to Win wherever you get your podcasts. Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat Rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live. All right, so let's take a look at the East, because what's happened over there is there's an interesting little race developing for that sixth seed as well. The 76ers just can't get wins, Bontemps. I know you just went to two games of theirs in the last few days.
Wait, they got one in Dallas?
They did. And Nick Nurse is, getting more and more frustrated. And I know that Embiid's not there, but they just can't score right now. Tobias Harris is in a miserable slump. And they are essentially tied. I think they're a half game ahead. There's one fewer loss from Indiana. They're a game back
It's percentage points because they've played their one win.
Well, and they're
less and one loss less. So they are 0.002 ahead of Indiana right now.
They're pretty heavy favorites now to be in the 7-8 game in the play-in.
Hard to say that because we don't know if/when Joel's coming back.
Well, I'm just saying, projection-wise, they're pretty heavily favored to be in the play-in, and he's probably not coming back soon enough, in my opinion, for that to dramatically change, given how
Nurse has been. I mean, I've watched some of his post-game pressers. He's trying to make it clear. He's trying to get these guys to rise up, and he's just not getting it from his team. Mm-hmm. And
we are now destined for Philadelphia to beat Milwaukee Thursday night ahead of which is happening after this pod, but they are currently 10-21 in games Joel Embiid does not play this season. Well, and 26-8 when he does.
Also, the Buddy Hield trade, which I thought was really a good trade for them, he hasn't been good, and they sent him to the bench.
You know who's actually been playing pretty good defense since the deadline? I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I believe the Pacers' defense has improved dramatically since.
Buddy has been fine. He's shooting 40% from three. It's just that they just as a team have not been good. And again,
well, I'm sure Buddy. I know Buddy said all the right things when he went to the bench, and he's headed for a free agency. I'm sure getting sent to the bench didn't make him the happiest camper.
Well, he's still getting up a lot of shots. I think his situation, I think, is fine. They are searching for anything to work because, as you said, other than basically the one good game they've had is the game that McMahon saw in Dallas, and then Tyrese Maxey got a concussion and missed a couple of. They had a game against Brooklyn that they almost won, and they had a game against Memphis that they almost won with a skeleton crew. And if he had been healthy, they probably win both those games, and maybe then they're on pace to finish sixth instead of eighth. But again, we're talking about the same kind of situation in the East as in the West, where you've got Indiana, Miami, and Philly all pretty bunched up projection wise. And as we've talked about a bunch, you drop a game or two you're supposed to win, those projections can shift pretty wildly pretty quickly. And we're still looking at a situation where it's not like it doesn't seem like he's coming back in the next couple days, certainly. So if you're talking 2-3 weeks, whatever, longer than that, the way they've played, it's just very hard to see them winning enough games to get ahead of, frankly, either Indiana or Miami, even though those teams aren't playing great.
Miami had a really strange skid here.
I said
the Pacers are playing pretty good defense since the All-Star break. Maybe I should say drastically improved. They're ranked 20th in the league defensively since the break, but 21st, the Philadelphia 76ers.
Yeah. There's been lots very low going well, and Tobias in particular has been very bad.
I think in another Hoop Collective jinx, we were talking about a week ago about how we thought the Heat had turned the corner.
Man.
And, you know, I really thought they were almost, I think I might even have said, I think they're staying in the top six. Don't worry about them in the play-in. And now look, they lost to the Nuggets at home. By the way, that game was close at the end, and then just the Nuggets like, yeah, Denver, you're not going to score. Miami, you're not going to score. I got to tell you, like, I can't really build a strong case for why the Nuggets aren't winning it if they stay healthy. If they lose one of their studs, okay. But like, I watched the end of this game last night. They were just like, yeah, we're going to play defense now. Forget about it. And Miami couldn't score. And, you know, I continue to expect that to be the case when they need to do it. But the Heat have lost, as you mentioned, several in a row here, including to the Wizards.
I was going
to
say, I saw the start of that losing streak against the Mavericks. You know, then they lose. So they've lost in that stretch at the Mavericks, at the Thunder, home against the Nuggets. Look,
yeah,
two really good teams, and the Mavericks, depending on the night you see them, can be a really good team. There's no shame in losing on the road.
Well, they have a baseball series with the Pistons over the weekend. They're going to have a Detroit weekend.
Home to the Wizards? What in the world?
Not great. Well,
like I said, they have a Detroit weekend, two games in Detroit, Friday and Sunday. They ought to win those games, although the Pistons are playing better,
a lot better,
getting some wins.
They are.
And then on Monday, they play a game that is on national TV at the 76ers. And when ESPN got that game, I'm sure they weren't thinking that this could be a pivotal game for the sixth seed.
Kyle Lowry revenge game, baby.
Here we are.
Uh-oh.
Right. Who, by the way, has played quite well since getting in the lineup for Philly, and he is the guy who has been starting in place of Buddy Hield the past couple games.
Reunited with Nick Nurse, and it feels so good.
Tobias Harris, by the way, since the All-Star break, shooting 42% overall, 29.8% from three. Kelly Oubre, since the All-Star break, shooting 39% overall, 25% from three. Nick Batum, since the All-Star break, has only taken four shots a game, shooting 28%. Obviously, most of those from three, 24% from three.
Yeah.
So they have scored. I mean, obviously, some of those games have been without Tyrese, but that's, I mean, you saw it these two games against the Knicks. People were talking about the Knicks defense. I mean, they're playing this Sixer team that just can't score at all. And it's a very difficult spot.
Hey, Wendy, you know, when the Wizards won in Miami, you know who had a big game that night? NBA 2K MVP.
Trust me, that's why we said it.
Corey Kispert. Listen, I wasn't on that pod. It was a viral, one of our classic viral Wendy moments. The only issue I have with you is don't let your son win. Don't let your son win. You've got to teach him competitive character. You can let him stack the odds. You'll play with the Wizards, but he's got to learn how to win games without you laying down for him.
By the way, that game updates in real time. So when the Wizards traded players off their roster, you know, Gafford gets offensive rebounds in that game. That's key.
He gets offensive rebounds in real life too.
When Kispert misses one out of every six threes in that game, Gafford would get the rebound. Well, they traded Gafford and that damn thing updated, and I don't even know who's starting at center now.
So it's stacked against you. Don't let him win. Make him learn how to pull it out down the stretch.
He takes losses. He's still learning how to play that game. When we play FIFA, he takes losses in FIFA. And
listen, I'm just telling you, we got to teach the kid some competitive character. And I know he's got confidence because I saw a video of a step back that he made. And
flexing.
Well, there might have been a walk there. That's okay.
Might have been.
Well, I mean, it was a Harden-esque step back.
He was six.
It was a hard-nest step back from 3 feet.
He was flexing on the way down the floor. So don't worry about his confidence. He's got some.
Yes. Well, Kispert is hard to handle in that game. There's no doubt about it. I don't care what anybody says. It's true. Unless my game's set on some setting that I don't know about, the dude is untouchable. Untouchable. Indiana is in seventh as we do this right now. We mentioned the other day, they just lost Ben Mathurin for the season.
Yeah.
Let me just take a look at their schedule here. So
Indiana, slight favorite to finish sixth ahead of Miami. So we could have a Sixers Heat play-in game for the seventh spot, which would certainly be a heck of a game on a variety of levels if it happens. Because A, you could have Embiid playing in the game by then, and B, despite the fact that you know, even by the projection system, it still has Cleveland in second, whether it's Cleveland or Milwaukee in second. The choice is playing Cleveland or Milwaukee or Boston in the first round.
Right.
That's quite a spread, especially because you then would be on the opposite side of Boston all the way until the conference finals in that scenario. So the Pacers still have potential play-in matchups all across the board.
The Pacers still have a West Coast trip they have to do. And so, you know, East teams going West, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, you know. The team that we should at least discuss briefly. I don't think they're moving out of the play-in zone, but the Chicago Bulls continue to be a very fascinating team. They went on a West Coast trip like last week and went 4-1, or I guess it was like 2 weeks ago, completely out of nowhere. Didn't expect it at all. And they had a big overtime victory over the Pacers.
In between, on Wednesday night, they got slacked by the Mavericks.
Yeah.
Losing by 30-something. They're hard to figure.
Yeah, at home they got crushed by the Mavericks.
Well, and by the way, again, we're in very dangerous territory because they're playing the Clippers tonight. But but Kawhi Leonard and James Harden are both questionable for that game, so it is a back to back, obviously, for the Bulls. But if they could find a way to win that game, they've got games with Washington, Portland, Houston, and a game against the Celtics. Probably going to lose, and then Washington again. So if they could manage to rip off some wins here, they at least have the potential to make this a bit of an interesting race for that second spot in the that 7-8 game. They're four losses back. I don't think they're getting there, but with the way, in particular, the Sixers have been playing and plummeting in recent games, I mean, they're five losses ahead, but still, I mean, this is a team that's, as I said before, they're playing at about a 30% win clip without Embiid. Like, there is at least a world where if the Bulls can stay anywhere near on the level they've been, you know, I don't know if DeMar's scoring 46 a night like he did to beat the Pacers.
By the way, he's incredible. Jeez, DeMar, he's making, can a guy on a team that finishes ninth in the conference, can he win clutch player of the year?
Oh, absolutely. I was just about to mention, like,
yeah,
he is for sure the Cojones factor player of the month front runner at this point. And you talk about clutch player of the year, DeMar DeRozan ranks second in the league in clutch scoring with 161 points, four behind Steph Curry. Clutch plus minus, Kobe White actually has the best clutch plus minus in the league. By the way, Kobe White got hurt in that game with
fell on late in the game by Pascal Siakam, made a great block and fell on. Sounds like it's not too bad though, and hopefully he'll be back as soon as this weekend, which would be huge. He's been great.
Anyways, Kobe White has the league's best plus minus at plus 89, but DeRozan's plus 76, which is sixth.
When they've played the most, they've either played the most or the second most clutched games and or minutes this season too. Every single game they play is a 5-point game with 5 minutes to go. It's always a roller coaster.
No, DeRozan hit just a crazy shot to send it into overtime. I mean, he is absolutely one of the top shelf elite clutch scorers in the league. And look, man, we've hammered the Bulls hard and rightfully because they've just refused to.
Yeah, because they're still below 500 despite all this.
But right. DeRozan is having a really, really good season for a mid-30s scorer.
Time for a gigantic four-year extension.
Well,
let's do it. Come on, baby. You can do it, Bulls. You can do it.
And again, like, look, if they're in there, like if they can find a way to make this thing interesting down the stretch, I mean, look, the Bulls are not a very good team, but the way Kobe White's played and the way DeMar's playing, I mean, if you're talking about a one-game situation, like maybe they could sneak a win. But the bigger point is as poorly as these teams above them have played, the fact that the Bulls have gone on a mini run here, they at least have given themselves an opening to make this thing interesting over the final couple of weeks of the season, which is certainly not anything I expected to be saying at any point. But that's both a credit to the way they've played and how poorly some of these teams above them have been.
And dead serious, you do not want to be in a close game with the Bulls because
game is a close game. I know. Play every game is like a clutch game.
Well, they're either playing close games or they're getting blown out.
Okay, fair.
But like, if they keep it close, they're tough, man. Not cutting.
It is still a 5-win difference in the projections too. So it's not like it's expected to be this close. But also, like, I don't think that quite takes into account the way Philly in particular has been playing over the past few weeks.
Just to build on the DeRozan clutch player of the year case, though, not cutting time. Last 3 minutes, one possession game within 3 points. He has 88 points. That's 20 some odd more than anybody else in the league. One possession game within the last minute, he has 54 points. Mm. That is Steph Curry's second in the league with 43. And it's all efficient. It's all shooting better than 50% from the floor.
Yeah, and I'd have to think about it more, but it's hard for me to think of somebody who's going to get that clutch award ahead of him this year.
Steph is going to get a lot of consideration. Again, Steph is the guy who has the most clutch points. Steph's obviously a huge name, et cetera, et cetera. Honestly, I think DeRozan's going to be tough to beat, though. You can make a case for Joker as well, but I don't know if you want to give that to. I don't know if you want to double.
He's gonna get the big crystal trophy.
Yeah.
He's gonna get not just clutch player. He's gonna get unclutch player. First quarter, second quarter, third quarter, fourth quarter. By the way, the Nuggets are again the number one clutch team.
Yeah.
Well, look, it's like we talked about when we talked about that Celtic game the other day. That when you get in the final 5 minutes of the game, just you run that Murray Jokic pick and roll, and like they might not score every time, but they're not going to make mistakes and they're going to get a good shot every time. And it's just such a massive advantage late in games to just know you're going to get something good every time.
And they're fully confident
they're going to get something good every time too.
The Heat really, really sold out trying to stop that. And Michael Porter slayed them because he was open on the backside. He got like seven wide open threes in that game and he made like four or five of them. So that's probably what you're going to do. You're probably, you know, in a series, you're probably going to say, well, make Michael Porter beat you. But of course, he can beat you. Mm-hmm. So
especially if they're catch and shoot threes,
which they were.
Yeah. And that's, and you know, and again, like you just, we'd see so many of these teams struggle in those situations to get quality shots. And you're talking about giving up open threes to a 40% 3-point shooter who's got one of the best shots in the league. Like,
right. Well, who's also, and that's 7 a better, and closing right. out to him is not.
But that's what I mean. That's a better outcome. That's a, that you can argue giving a good big shooter is definitely a better outcome.
Not even having, argue. It is the right. better outcome.
Well, right. But, and then you say, well, don't give Michael Porter Jr. clean looks at catch and shoot threes. Oh, geez. You wonder how Aaron Gordon keeps cutting for lob dunks from right. Aaron Gordon clutch situations. Well, don't right, give him it, that. Well, okay, yeah, great. Let Joker go one-on-one or play, you know, deal with yeah. a two-man game with him and Murray without loading up on health.
KCP shooting 39% too. I mean, this is why, you know, it's why they're so devastating in that, like, what that did, those guys know where they need to be. And I mean, we've talked about it a bunch. It's why.
What did Calvin Booth say in the interview with The Ringer with Kevin O'Connor at the beginning of the year, which was controversial because he apparently thought he was off the record. What did he say? He said something like,
he said a lot of things
and they were all spectacular and they were all right.
I think you're referring to the thing where he sort of kind of predicted that they were about to run off a few championships.
He's like, if we, I don't have it exactly in front of me, but he said something like, if we take care of our business, we should win 3-4, whatever, 2-3-4, whatever yeah. he said.
Look, as you sit here right now, again, it's, we got to see how this plays out, but I'm not picking anybody to beat them this year. These guys are in their primes.
Yeah.
They're under contract. They fit together. Like, it's a pretty impressive group. Young guys are playing well. It's, I mean, there's not a lot of holes.
Low key boss move. When the Nuggets kind of knew they had that series in hand after they won game three, in Miami, got home court back. Low key boss move for them to do a trade for extra draft picks in that series. Middle of the finals. They execute a trade for extra draft picks. Like, yeah, we know we're probably going to win this series. We're probably going to win a bunch more. We need some cheap talent. They could have done that trade after the finals. Like, no.
Probably.
We got it. We're up 2-1. We got Jokic. We know we're going to be just fine. Like, it's awesome. It's awesome that they did that, and they did it during the finals. I believe it was the day of game four. If it wasn't the day of game four, it was like the day before game four. I think it was the day of game four. They did a draft pick trade the day of a finals game. Which, by the way, once they won, they knew it was over. You know, Jokic was celebrating more after game four than he was basically after game five, other than when he jumped, he threw Jamal Murray into
the hot tub. I was going to say, now the Jokic brothers, they had a time after game five.
The Jokic brothers were with our guy, friend of the pod, Bogey Bogdanovich. They felt pretty good. I saw him in the stands. All right. Thanks for listening and watching the Hoop Collective podcast. Special shout out, Kent State Golden Flashes. It's supposed to be rebuilding year after winning the MAC last year. Upset the number one seed Toledo Rockets on Thursday. Great job, Golden Fascists. Keep it going. Thank you to our producer, Jackson. Thank you to Bontemp. Thank you, McMahon. And we'll talk to you next week.
Kent State Golden Flashists want a shout out from me. They can send me some free gear. Adios, amigos.